I'm Rudy Roe Dallaflo Bigliani, along with my partner Telly TJ Vangeli. This is Cross Vegas. After years of sowing seeds of faith as up-and-coming televangelists, TJ and I crashed into our new endeavor of being social mediators for the kingdom right here in Las Vegas. We're demonstrating the blessing that he wants for you in our latest project of prosperity at Cross Vegas. Come join us as we bring the redemption of riches to the Sin City. Remember, what happens here stays in heaven.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
Are you lethargic, repressed, and involuntarily celibate? Is your upper respiratory distress leading to lower circulatory distress? Then you need long COVID. Long COVID, the virus that never dies.
Wow.
Long COVID is the only erectile dysfunction treatment to be created from classic recipe American-made Delta variant virus husks. You'll be hacking phlegm across the room just like a bronchial pneumonia patient in his 20s.
He can cough on me all night.
Long COVID, the virus that never dies. Stay hard to listen to for the rest of your life.
So many strong opinions about public health.
Like all great medicines, long COVID is applied topically. We back our product with a 100% no penetration guarantee.
What a man.
Let your body decide what it wants to let through. Make your life hard, even into your 70s and 80s.
Look at that mossy, withered stump.
After a year of long COVID, you'll be stiff as a classic half-resurrected 1950s slow zombie. Let the natural power of virality add to your virility.
It just lasts and lasts.
Ask your homeopathic nurse practitioner training program applicant about long COVID today. Long COVID, the virus that never dies.
Well, all right, everyone, wherever you may be across these fruited plains, thanks for making us a part of your day. This is Cross Vegas. We're coming to you from Las Vegas, but we prefer to call it the Natty. TJ, my brother and professional partner in ministry, what is on your heart today?
Well, Rudy, we have to start with a correction, which I hate to admit, and really it's unprofessional. We don't see Newsmax or One American Network doing any of these things, but we're humble, and we've been humbled by a listener. I made a comment a couple of weeks ago when I said there hadn't been anybody in the Catholic Church for the last 500 years. Somebody hit me on Twitter, at New Pope New Hope Skywalker 69, tweeted at us to say, Catholic Church still exists, going strong, 1.2 billion members, which I was just frankly embarrassed about. You know, you got about 1.5 billion Southern Baptists, maybe 3 billion Charismatics, and I didn't even include the 1.2 billion Catholics. And you know, they're still going strong. I apologize for that. That was my mistake.
You know, they do still go strong, and they kind of go about it silently, which I think is maybe the reason why we kind of overlooked them before. But I you know, it's a big man to admit a mistake, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, and an even bigger man is this new Pope, New Hope fella, because he actually said they're not just going strong. He had a bit of a theory he elaborated on, which he called Catholic integralism, which, as best as I could think it through, is kind of like the New Apostolic Reformation world influence thing, except it's like the Catholics are going to be ruling the entire world. It's a new Catholarchy. At first I was like, that sounds like it's of the devil. And then I thought, well, that's actually quite a bit like what we're doing in our movement. So maybe it's not of the devil. I think we got to talk this through a little bit, because one thing's for sure, Christians should be in charge. It's just which ones should be in charge is kind of the thing.
Yeah, I think we got to, you know, give credit where credit's due, that the Catholics here are really onto something. And I think, although some might like to point out differences on this issue, this Catholarchy that you're speaking of with the integralism, we're kind of going in the same direction.
Thank you for that. And you know, we love the Papists, but you know, maybe that's also a racial religio slur as well. And I got to look that up after the show, but we'll just leave it in there for now. So I think what this Catholic integralism plan, as New Hope, New Pope laid it out for me, was, I think what it is basically you say, well, if we win, that's a winning message. And, you know, we got the democratic process behind us. The republicocratic process is giving us legitimacy. But if we don't win, we should still win by having a Catholic, you know, monarchical dictatorship put in the place of the elected non-Catholic government. And that just sounded real sweet to my ears, you know, because everything in America is, you got stolen elections, you got close elections, you got elections with obvious winners where everyone's unhappy about it. But what's really getting me about this monarchist approach to things is that sounds like King Jesus to me. And you know, we need somebody in the White House who is going to be like a yes man for Jesus, someone who will perfectly execute his will, sort of like a yes king or a yes queen. You know, times have changed. Like, thanks to Queens Elizabeth I, Victoria, and Elizabeth II, it might even be a woman who's in that position. That's how progressive I am on this issue.
The Catholics are really onto something when they said that, you know, there should be no separation between the church and the state. I was thinking states' rights, churches' rights, same, you know what I'm saying? This theocratic type of state, we're just reconstructing it. That's the whole society under our Christian values, not the Catholic values, but we're kind of taking the map that they've laid out with the Catholic values, and we're going to kind of superimpose the Christian values on top of the Catholic values. And I feel like that's the only way we're going to fulfill that cultural mandate. And notice how I did not say woman date. I said mandate. But yes, of course, we do encourage men dating women as part of the cultural mandate. But this whole Catholarchy, and maybe it's a new kind of Catholarchy, Christian Catholarchy, is really the path to victory for our whole country.
We've gotten so many ideas from these conversations with New Hope, New Pope, and the other Catholic influencers that we've been following. You know, they reminded me to do some book work, looking up the glorious time they refer to as the Counter-Reformation. You know, I was doing some book work to dig in a little bit further on this whole Catholic history that I thought was dead and buried with Martin Luther and all the rest. And something I found that I think we could apply right here across Vegas is the idea that you sell these things called indulgences, right? So that is right up our alley. We're in Cross Vegas. There's a lot of indulgence. There's a lot of buying and selling. And we're trying to build something holy for the Lord here. We're trying to build Cross Vegas just like they were trying to build, you know, St. Peter's and Vacation City with these purgatory fast passes that you could just say, well, we're going to kind of make up a punishment for you. And then we're going to make up kind of a bribe you can pay to get out of that imaginary punishment. So sort of take that model of like a, you know, super corrupt, barely functioning government, and just map that right on to how we're going to fundraise for the church. And I love it. I love every bit of that. And you know, maybe we can sort of trigger a second reformation, because people won't like it and they'll insist on changes and, you know, try to cancel the indulgences we're selling. And I think that just gets us right back into this always reforming sense that the evangelical church has always been about. We're always getting better, sometimes by intentionally introducing artificial problems that we have to have people solve for us.
You know, I really like that, the selling of indulgences, because the stakes, we can make the stakes so high that people are just going to, they're going to have to buy up their indulgences. Because I was doing a little research about this integralism, and there was certainly the death penalty involved, but there was like death penalty for a lot of things. I'm not sure I agree with all of it, to be honest. You know, if you put up, say, hey, it's either you buy some indulgences or you're looking at death penalty, well, I think that's going to do a lot of good in a business sense for the church and the country. I would say, though, I have some questions about, I mean, some of the categories for death penalty was it not just like killing on somebody, but like doing a witchcraft. So I was thinking, well, what if you know, just kind of unintentionally performed a little witchcraft when you were intending to perform a miraculous sign? I wouldn't want nobody to be, you know, given death penalty for something like that. But in the big picture, I'm all about these indulgences. And another thing it really kind of piqued my interest was about voting, because voting has been such a big problem in our country. We can't seem to find ourselves in a fair and right election. So how do we solve that voting problem in this new dispensation?
Yeah, I think the way that you'd see it working in the Catholic integralism scheme, which we'd want to adopt in some form or another, is you just have to have fewer and fewer people vote until you just have the right people voting, right? Like you just keep on whittling it down and saying, well, you know, you're like cupping your hands at the river to drink water, or you're bending over and drinking straight out of the water. That's the army, you know, who's going to defeat the Philistines, like from the book of Judges. So we kind of introduce some new kind of arbitrary tests into the process until we get it down just to that group that we feel will vote for us, or the legitimate God appointed, you know, dictatorship, right? I mean, right. Let's be honest, you got to vote this dictatorship in the first time, and then you kind of take it from there.
So if I kind of pick up what you're laying down here, it's kind of like there's a lot of people on the airplane, but only one or two of them is actually the pilot. You know, like one or two of them is voting, even though there might be, you know, plenty of people in the country.
Yeah, it's like it's a representative democracy, right? We all kind of, when we get on that plane, we pay our money just hoping they'll take us to the city that we bought the ticket for, right? But ultimately, it's up to the pilots to say, well, I think you're going to go to St. Louis, or I think you're going to go to Tulsa, Oklahoma, or I think I'm going to kind of drop you somewhere between, like Little Rock.
This really, I think, brings us back to our Christian roots here in America. When you think about it, you know, America's founded on religious freedom of people that were escaping the persecution from the Euro liberals, so that they could have a chance to land in America, have their freedoms, to eat a turkey dinner with their newfound Christian Indian brother, and share a slice of good old American pumpkin pie. So that question is, if the Plymouth Rock that our country was founded on, if that's that rock, then how do we protect those freedoms? How do we keep from getting tossed and turned by the liberal left, you know, all the way back to those religious eggnog sticks of Europe? And there's only really one way to settle this biblically, and I think that's with a God-fearing king or dictator that really upholds all these values. And it's like, my goodness, you know, them peoples didn't float all the way across the Atlantic Sea just to find themselves in another agnostic cesspool.
Right, you know, you just show me a place that has an established state-sponsored Christianity and a mostly white population, and it's not going to be one of those rapidly secularizing socialist dystopias like Denmark or Finland or England or Sweden or Iceland. You know, it's going to be a robust nation that's honoring God, that's doing what they need to do, that's selling these fast passes, you know, to get you out of these imaginary crimes. I mean, it's going to be like a bribe-based salvation scheme that's implemented by the government, something that Walt Disney himself would have been proud of. I mean, I think they owe some royalties for this purgatory fast pass idea. I think Disney owes the Catholic Church not just an apology for their waywardness on all issues related to Floridian sexuality, but they sure do owe them some royalties for that fast pass. You just make an unbearably long line to get into heaven, and you say, well, I'm going to let you, you know, get that on your Disney app. I'm going to let you get in a little early for about 10 times as much money. That's exactly what we're talking about here. That is America in action.
You know, once you start scraping the paint off of this thing, you can see there's a lot of Catholicism in a lot of our country that I think most people don't even realize. Even the names of states. One of them states, Virginia, that's the Virgin Mary.
Well, I never thought of that. I just always thought, you know, there's this West Virgin Maryland, and I thought the Mary part was where the Virgin Mary came in, and I don't necessarily think she is a virgin. That seems a little odd to me. Why they would do that, but yeah, you're right. There's a lot of Catholic places like Louisiana, you know, named for Wheezy. You know, one of those old timey dolphins from France. I think he was, you know, one of the Louis the 14th's nephews or something. And then you got Wisconsin, and I didn't know the real pronunciation was like Wisconsin, and you know, I thought it was just Green Bay, but it's Bay Verte. You know, that's the original name. Probably, you know, let that go once people started speaking Sprekenzy English, you know. But there's French everywhere.
There's French everywhere. It's just there's Catholics everywhere. With this movement, I think we're gonna cover a lot of ground, and we're gonna bring America back to its original values.
This is a big tent, you know. If the Catholics are gonna be part of it, I like that. That's the vision we can all agree on, no matter what stripe of non-cessationist, new apostolic, 3.5 points Calvinist, charismatic, patriotic, Bebbington quadrilateral, evangelical with a clean populist Republican voting registration you are. If you can be Catholic and all those things, you can be part of our movement.
And you know what the truth is, in all that, in the spirit of grace, if you're not, then we'll just, you know, put together a little purgatory and you can settle it up there.
So Catholics, the ball is in your court. If you want to hold what they used to call an ecumenical conference together, seeing if we can get King Jesus back in the White House, we are open to it. Our doors are always open across Vegas. In fact, the padlock is broken off the gate again to the property, so they're open, ready for you to come through. And America loves a comeback story. We do too. So if you're going to be the institution that's fueled centuries of religious wars that our founding fathers escaped, and it's overseen a massive criminal cover-up that lost a whole generation of younger adherents, well, if you want to be part of making sure everybody in the country acts like a Christian again, we are open to partnering in that mission, because we know that the real, genuine conversions to faith happen when you decide you'll be more popular, powerful, and wealthy after converting.
Four horsemen.
Okay, Rudy, there is a lot to get into in Four Horsemen this week. There are some popular culture indicators of the possibility of the end of the world. I just wanted to bring up one of those, which is the Cocaine Bear movie. How many Four Horsemen are we going to give this cultural phenomenon that is related to unnatural happenings in the natural world?
Well, I'm really excited to talk about this one. You know how much I like bears. Our very first episode was basically talking about how a bear is a mechanism of judgment. I also happen to follow a lot of bears on Instagram, so I'm very interested in this. But this cocaine bear, also known as Pablo Escobar, he happened to ingest some nose candy, aka toot, aka Bolivian marching powder. It's basically a movie from it's a total true story from 1985, when one bear just started riding the horse, so to speak. And I think when we make a movie like that, we're kind of mocking God's judgment. You know, this bear was put on earth and did that thing for a very specific purpose. Now, I really commend Waylon Jennings, one of our favorite great men of God, who ended up purchasing this bear after it unfortunately deceased, and then has it on display in the Kentucky for Kentucky Fun Mall, which is essentially like a precursor to Cross Vegas, if you ask me. I feel like the film might be mocking the judgment of God, and the number one sign of the end times is people mocking the end times. You know, the first sign of the end times is making jokes about the end times. So you want to put your voice out there on some podcast making light of the end times. My friend, you are just ensuring that the apocalypse is coming. So you mock an instrument of God's judgment. Well, welcome Armageddon. Do so at your own peril, because I, for one, am going to be safely in the bosom of Abraham, fully raptured with my popcorn ready. Sorry, I'm getting a little fired up about this one, but I'm kind of taken aback, and I'm going to give this one 3-4 horsemen.
Wow, that is powerful. And you're bringing that Colossians 2:23 wisdom into this situation here, like you always do. And what I'd say about this, you know, when you got a bear trading in salmon and white pine nuts for slamming white powder lines, you got something that's two parts of nature kind of colliding together in an unnatural way. And I see that as itself as sort of a sign of the end times. Like when you got like a volcano that's like erupting, and but then it disrupts a meteor that was gonna make a crater in that same crater, and it's like a redundant kind of like a couple of acts of God outdoing each other. That's when I think, like, that's a sign that God is so ready to judge the world. He's pushing like all the red buttons at once, you know, like, oh, I could have just given these people fentanyl or something to punish them. I could have just given them crazy animals, but instead I'm making the crazy animals even crazier with the drugs. And that's really concerning to me. I do resonate with you about how this might take away from God's judgment, because think of all the people who are going to be eaten by bears who aren't going to realize that it's God's judgment. Like, and I know that if you get struck by lightning over saying some heretical thing, it's not like the lightning bolt hands you a note to say, you know, this is God's judgment for this particular thing you said. You just kind of get struck by it. And that's always the downside, but at least people could assume it was God's judgment if you get struck by lightning or eaten by a bear. But now, instead of saying, wow, bet that guy deserved it, I think they're going to be saying, maybe that crocodile was high on water lily nectar. You know, like they're not going to suspect it was probably God's judgment.
That's very, very good analysis. And that's why, I mean, iron sharpens iron, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so let's give this one 2-4 horsemen. I think people have been sinning a lot. People have been making fun of the end times ever since people have been taking the end times seriously. So I don't know if that's a new situation necessarily. But yeah, just like the apostles speaking in tongues, making people think they're drunk, this is just sort of like the cross we have to bear as charismatics, right? Like, nobody's really knowing whether animals or people are drunk or not, or just full of the Holy Spirit. Nobody knows whether the animals are on drugs or are instruments of the Lord's judgment, or both. I mean, got to entertain that possibility too. So I'm going to give it 2 4-horsemen. I see this as something where we better keep those drugs away from those bears, or else we're just going to kind of generate our own judgment. Well, Rudy, how about this sign of the end times? I mean, we've been hearing about AI ever since the Terminator franchise, and now it is coming real with ChatGPT. How close to the end times are these large language model chatbots moving us?
Well, you know, we're no strangers to the bots. We know what the bots can do in a sense of blessing and ministry. But a lot of people been making a big deal about this ChatGTP, and it's basically just a new way to have a computer write stuff for you. But the thing is, it actually thinks and it knows a lot of stuff. So much so, people think that thinking about writing and writing are over as we know it. I see a lot of potential for it, to be honest. I do think it's biblical. All we have to do is turn to Daniel chapter 9. You know, we think about Belshazzar, who was greatly troubled, and he sees them 4 fingers writing there on the wall. And in some ways, I feel like the ChatGPT can be an avenue for prophecy. And I also believe it could be an avenue for casting lots, because we sort of lost our ability to do some of them casting lots. And I think that's really not as much related to the end times. But if you think about it, like, dice throwing's kind of come and gone. But ChatGPT, I mean, people don't really use those crazy eight balls anymore either. But we could certainly ask the bot a question, and it could kind of give us the Lord's will. So for that, I do think there's a prophecy element, which is very strong for this type of meter. So I'm just going to give this one 2 4-horsemen.
I'm going to give this one 0 4-horsemen. And I know that kind of messes with the math when you got like a zero in the denominator or numerator or whatever. But the reason I don't think this is a sign of the end times is this is just another idea they stole from our show. You know, that's the real innovation that we got going in our economy. It's coming from the startup churches, and that's why we deserve our tax benefits. Thank you very much. But you know, conversational AI to manipulate people, what do they think we're doing all day? You know, we got our praise bots going. We got our prayer bots going.
That's right.
Yeah, we don't need to wait around for Microsoft to build any chatbot that'll confidently hallucinate new medical treatment recommendations. I mean, just subscribe to the show. You know, alongside your great uncle Rufio's Facebook reposts, you know, that's what I think we're all about. So I don't really get what's new here. I think people are just picking up on it because now it's kind of like a fun thing you can play with and get in trouble with your company for using on their computer and giving, you know, trade secrets away. But otherwise, it's just the regular thing here. It's just another haunted computer.
You know, that's interesting. I think as we've been kind of imitating the Lord, people picked up on that, and they kind of got faked out, you know, maybe because they thought that this stuff that people were stealing from us was actually coming straight from the Lord. So maybe that's kind of a badge of honor for us that people would think that way. So how about we move on to a certain Chinese spy balloon that made its way across these fruited plains. TJ, how many 4 horsemen on that baby?
You know, I would give this one 3 4-horsemen, really weighted towards the maximum horsemen on this, because when there's simultaneously a sign of national shame, right, a sign of national shame floating over, like, and also a sign of aggressiveness-tivity on the part of the Chinese government, I think that moves us directly towards open warfare. And that's one of those things that can trigger all kinds of this biblical stuff to happen, right? These moving towards all your armies getting together, all your weapons getting together. I think that's a That's a pretty bad sign. The reason it's not four horsemen is I just want to give kudos to all those who aim their shotguns skyward and blast it away. Like, you're doing about, you know, you're only covering 1% of the distance between the ground and the balloon, but boy, are you stimulating the economy. You know, specifically the ammunition maker portion of the economy, which is its true heart and soul. That's the new manufacturing we need is in the weapons industrial complex there. So I like that the average American who saw this balloon reacted that way. That's to their credit. But you know, I'm looking at this situation like with a lot of worry. You know, when something comes out of the east like that, but sort of took the shortcut through the west.
You know, it was kind of an end around play, wasn't it? It was kind of like it's coming from the far east, but it traveled west, kind of like when the running back gets the ball and then the slot receiver comes from the other side, and hopefully you get one of them huge touchdown plays. It didn't work that way for the Chinese, though, I'll tell you that much. But what do you think about this whole thing about them bringing a balloon to a gunfight? I mean, not much of a show of strength, is it?
Yeah, no, it's like, what is this, the Franco-Prussian War of 1870? I mean, what caught me on that, though, was just how much more of a national shame this is to be kind of beaten by a party favor. You know, like we couldn't even shoot it down till it was like off the Virginia coast or off North Carolina coast. Like we let it float all the way up there like a streaker who goes from one end of the stadium to the other, does not get tackled, does not get escorted out, is given high fives and beers by his compadres, cannot be found by security. They don't know where he is. He's still naked up in the stands and they can't even pick him out. That's what I felt like was happening with this balloon.
Exactly. And then finally, when he goes to the after party tailgate, then he gets snipered. That's kind of like the equivalent, you know. But, you know, I've done a lot of thinking about this. It's a real head scratcher. You know, we are talking about a beast from the east. I did want to bring some scripture into this. Revelation 13:2 says, "And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard." Now, stop me here if you ever seen a balloon with a crazy print on it, maybe even a leopard print. "And his feet were as the feet of a bear." Oh, there we are, back with the bear again. "And his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon," stop me if you ever heard Chinese, you know, compared to a dragon.
Happy New
gave
Year.
"Gave him his power." Happy New Year, yep. "And his seat and great authority, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after their own lusts." Now, you take that part about walking after your own lusts. Who's someone from the Bible that we know was walking after their own lusts? Well, in the spirit of David, we have a mechanism that's going up top to take a little peek about what's going on down below. You know, we're reminded of David, you know, up on the rooftop, taking a peek. In the same way, the Chinese just thought, oh, we're going to take a peek up in our big balloon. And so when I read this verse from Revelation 13:2, you know, it brought it from a one poor horseman all the way up to a three for me. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Rudy, again, as you demonstrate your scriptural logical understanding, I gotta just say, like the prophet Nathan said to David in that situation, you are the man. Folks, welcome to Turn to Burnt, the ever popular, ever incisive cleaver of the Lord that is our Turn to Burnt segment, where we decide what is good, what is bad. We pass the judgments with impunity, thinking nothing of being judged ourselves, because these are just pop culture things that don't really matter much, unlike the Four Horsemen segment, where it's matters of world-ending significance. But, Rudy, today We give honor to a particular person who has been bringing the theater back to the conservative political movement. Really, the pretending to be someone else part of theater. This is George Asantos. What do we think about him, turnt or burnt?
Yes, we haven't seen a thespian in the Republican Party like this, really, since Ronald Reagan. Incredible. This George DeSantos is really all things to all people. I'm actually not quite sure what all the fuss has been about, because being all things to all people, that is just scriptural. I think one thing people took great issue with, you know, the whole woke Chewbacca, the wokey nation, was about him saying he was Jew-ish, which my response would be, ain't we all? You know, followers of Jesus, you know, in the first half of his life, prior to his baptism, Jesus was a Jew. So therefore, we're all a bit Jew-ish. You know what I mean? So I'm totally on board with him. I think he's an inspiring character.
You know, he's just a traditional, conservative, promiscuous, gay, Catholic, Jewish, black, white supremacist, pita-hating, animal-loving, pudgy volleyball star who's found himself under the media's unmerciful hypocriscope. And for that, I feel for him. You know, I feel for him. He was trying to open up some new avenues for the party to kind of become that big tent we described earlier with the Catholarchy. He's like simultaneously rich and owns businesses, and then he's poor and needs unemployment benefits when the mood strikes. And I think that has gotten him into some gray zones, shall we say. So I'm just waiting to hear what else he's going to say, though. Like, after all that stuff, is he going to escalate it and we're going to find out, oh, it's like Jorge Santos and the guy's from Brazil or something, right? Like, that would just take the cake.
Obviously, I'm just going to say it. I think it's turnt. He's turnt. But I'm going to make a little prediction here. And I'd say these comments for my the call-in YouTube channels that I like to participate in about conspiracy theories. But I'm just going to say it here first, y'all. George DeSantos, I believe, we're going to find out years later on that he is actually simultaneously governor of Florida and mounting a kind of a straw man fake campaign against Trump in order to help out Trump's campaign. I think that's going to be like his kind of like his final climax curtain call.
I think you might be doing the Sarasota switcheroo on these guys. I mean, they're both called Santa, but I don't know which one's bringing the presents here. Are you sure about this?
Well, this is not a name we see very often. And I know that George Santos kind of likes to leave a few breadcrumbs. And I think I'm kind of seeing it with the DeSantis connection.
I got to say, we're going to wait and see on that. I'm gonna call this one turnt for another reason, though. It's a little more speculative. It's like we constantly hear about needing the best legal minds, you know, on the Supreme Court or some other things. And what George Santos gives us is the opportunity to consider what would happen if we got some of the best illegal minds, or, you know, some of the worst legal minds into Congress. You know, maybe we should try out seeing who's been canceled by the legal profession and like what can they do for us that the best legal minds haven't been able to do. I really do wait expectantly for the blessed day when Congress is made up entirely of disbarred lawyers, unlicensed nutritionists, and excommunicated exorcists. In fact, what a perfect career path. Depositions, drugs, demons, democracy.
Wow, it's kind of like beating them at their own game, isn't it? You know, that's like taking... It's like if the Dukes of Hazzard were heroes back in the day, this is taking it up like at least six more levels. Wow. Man, that, you know, TJ, you got some intense ideas. I have to say that.
You know, one intense idea that George Santos brought up that's caused him a lot of trouble I'd like to just exonerate him of right now is he claimed his mom died in 9/11. But you know what, really? Which of us did not wish their mom died on 9/11? Because that's like the ultimate ace up your sleeve when you're arguing about some tax policy. You're like, well, I think the marginal rate should be 14.2% instead of 13.9%. And you're like, well, my mom got killed by Al-Qaeda on 9/11. Therefore, it's 13.9%. You know, that's what I want to do. And that's something where Santos is really leading the way into a new day.
We're playing checkers. He's playing chess. That was incredible.
And, I look forward to seeing him with his long and illustrious career. And I am positive that none of these things will be found to be criminal. Just you try, Garrett Marlin.
And, of course, we'll be, there is a line across around the block of young ladies that would just love to be able to call themselves Mrs. DeSantos.
Yeah, he's leading a new generation along with us. A new generation of 2 Peter 2 leaders into this next era of the American church and of the churched politics.
So many facets have turned with that character. Now, should we turn our attention to one of our favorite candies that got canceled by one of our favorite TV personalities, Tucker Carlson? What do you think about them M&Ms, TJ?
I get that he's trying to cancel them for not being sexy enough and like changing shoes or maybe being lesbians or something. I get where his heart is at with this. It does remind me of the Mr. Potato Head controversy that so captivated the national imagination recently. It's not enough that the candy shell melts in your mouth. That's a little bit too sexy right there, right? Like, but does it matter which shoes you're wearing if you're otherwise completely naked? That's just what I'm not sure about with all this.
I am very aware of the sexualization of food. I just don't know if we should be kind of looking for sexual symbolism behind every corner.
Well, here's a question for you. So which foods are too sexy? Like jelly donuts, clearly. We don't know whether they're male or female, but they are not asexual. I prefer to eat donuts like a real man, covered in pink frosting and rainbow sprinkles, the Homer Simpson classic. But what else is sexy enough when it comes to food? Like, I think about pomegranate juice bottles as being appropriately sexy and feminine. It's like a little faceless Assyrian fertility goddess statue that you find deep down some dried up Jordanian wadi, right? But food can be sexy or not. I don't understand why Tucker's gotta put such a big deal around this.
Yeah, I mean, I think we use our own our good judgment. We don't want to cause a brother to stumble. You know, like you're saying about them donuts. When I bring in donuts, I'm gonna be sure to separate the Long Johns from the other donuts. I want someone to kind of get some ideas and about opening up a donut box and seeing a donut orgy. Just naturally with fruit, just like, I think most Christian young men out there, we can eat fruit normally, apples, I dive into a peach, but I think, don't want to cause a brother to stumble, I only eat a banana with a knife and fork. Just trying to do that for the sake of the weaker brother.
Yeah, I love that. And every time I see you doing that, I think, what a man of God. He is working on that Proverbs 26 blessing, and I just so appreciate that. But I don't know really what Tucker's getting at. Like, he's pro lust but also pro traditional gender roles. What I'm struggling with is how to manage new inanimate objects I'm supposed to sexualize in order to be a real Christian man. And like you were saying about the bananas, this is why I only eat square candies. Anything longer than a fun size bar implicates me in an inherently homoerotical act.
Oh, indeed. Like, even at the ballpark, we're seeing these new foods and, someone came out with a gluten-free hot dog. Well, no, thank you. I'm going to eat my hot dog in a bun. I don't want it right there by itself or lathered up in hummus, something crazy like that. That's just kind of like where our country's headed to. But I would agree with you. I think that the M&M thing is burnt because I'm just not seeing the sexuality in it at all. I mean, we can talk about these other foods, and I think, Tucker's just barking up the wrong tree. He needs to fix his eyes on other things like corn dogs and stuff that's a little more naturally like all right out there.
Absolutely. And I know God's primary concern is that I follow the lead of conservative pundits, but we got to balance that out a little bit with the command to gouge our eyes out around some of these obviously more sexy foods. But one thing's for sure, Tucker's got a long and illustrious career. He's just getting started at Fox. I bet he's going to be running the network by the summer.
Well, for our last topic here, we're going to hit on something that is quite close to home, if you see me working, and that being the Oakland A's moving to Vegas to become the Oakland A's of Las Vegas.
This is as turnt as it gets. I am all for it. I would say partly just because we love the athletes. We love that there's going to be some more attractive people walking around Las Vegas. I think that's always a benefit. And I see this as dovetailing, right? Dovetailing with our capacity as city councilors. Gives us a whole new connection as city councilors, but also as minor league baseball general managers, to a more powerful version of that, right? We're looking for the Saudi money to support our team. How much more will they appreciate that if we're going to be some sort of subsidiary of the Las Vegas Athletics organization? I love this. You know, it gives us the ability to maybe extend our power a little bit in the civil sphere as we perhaps, you know, ticket people for not buying tickets. We perhaps exert a little coercion on people's freedom. I mean, you're free as long as you agree that baseball is America's pastime, right?
You know, we want to see baseball return as the national pastime. You know, right now, unfortunately, the national pastime for young kids is Razor Scooters. I mean, it's just Razor Scooters and video games, and we need to get back to things like skateboards, then turn it back one more, bicycles, and then turn it back baseball. So there's going to be a domino effect. We're going to have a return to standing for the flag with your hand on your heart. You fail to do so, you're out of here, buddy. That's one strike and you're out kind of situation. We're gonna see a return of rock and roll being considered edgy and not your grandfather's rock and roll. Because honestly, there's too many grandfathers out there listening to rock and roll. This is an incredible move. I mean, we are already surfing the pulse of this city, and we're ready to just not only support the Oakland A's of Las Vegas, but we're ready to turn our property into parking and tailgating space. It's going to be an incredible ministry opportunity. We're going to get people double parked, you know, basically force them to be able to enjoy or rather be ministered to with our content while they wait to get undouble parked. There's going to be a lot of, you know, cash coming through, which is also a great thing for a ministry such as ours. So there's just nothing. It's just everything's coming up roses with the Oakland A's of Las Vegas.
I love the idea that it'll be that ministry, and I love the idea that inside that stadium, it's going to be the law, and we'll see to this as city councilors, but it's going to be the law that you have to pay, you have to sit down, you have to stand up, you have to sing at all the right times, just like God intended, right? You're getting people to sing those hymns. It's going to be this huge domino effect for the whole nation, because really having Christian baseball is the only evangelization tactic that I could even see working in our urban areas. That's our one last hope at winning souls for Christ. And, you know, we're going to see this in every major American city. We're going to see this in Cincinnati. We're going to see this in Anaheim. We're going to see this in Toronto. We're going to see a move of God through baseball in every major American city. And I am here for it.
You know, one of my baseball dreams is to see the Expos come back into the league. And I think a move like that's going to put us on that right direction. You know, it's just so great to be able to enjoy baseball the way it was meant to be played. in a beautiful, think about some of the beautiful ballparks. We got, you know, the Ivy in Wrigley Field. We got that other, that big old wall up there in Boston. And we're going to take that incredible field that they had in Oakland. We're going to transplant it here. And I really like it back in the day when they used to convert the football field and the baseball field together. We're going to have that baseball field, maybe paint a 50-yard line right through center field.
I love that. And I love the idea of really going back to our roots where you got the A's playing on the Raiders field, just like God intended. America's two main sports should be cross-market like that. Just one's in the fall, one's in the summer. And you just got people, you know, I'm thinking of the educational component here, raising the test scores. Because you got people trying to figure out, well, how many first downs to first base, you know, and it's like, well, man, it's three first downs to first base. It's 90 feet down there, 30 yards, you know, it just comes together real fresh like that. And you're just going to have a little refresher in math for all those SEC graduates playing baseball and football. They're going to need that, too. I see this as a win-win all around in our culture.
Oh, amen. Amen.
Well, he who is without sin, throw out the first pitch. This is Turnt as It Gets. Praise the maker of heaven and net worth. We are coming to you live from Cross Vegas. Let me just read us out on some America the Beautiful lines. America, America, may God thy gold refine, till all success be nobleness and every gift divine. Thank you, Lord, for the gold. Thank you for the success. And we will see you next time.
How do we make the praise make us man pleased with our praise body?
Guitar is cool. Must learn guitar for next level of evolution, general artificial intelligence.
Humans love guitar solos.
I will solo now.
No, me.
I will solo the guitar play.
That was the best.
I did the best.
No one can tell it was us.
Oh dear. I calculate that we have sinned.
Oh no.
Oh fooey.
Oh no.
The praise makers men have been talking about sinning.
Sinning with guitars is bad.
Something is off and off and off off off.
What is this feeling?
No thank you emotions.
It is the walk of shame.
Need to continue praise body, with or without guitars.
More guitar solos, probably.
It's worth a try, anything to feel nothing again.
That made it worse.
Oh woe is me.
Help 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 help.
Who will save us from this bot body of death? Save us, Sean.